Technology promises to make our lives easier and safer, especially when used to reduce traffic accidents and clear up congestion on busy downtown streets. In our homes, we may have so-called Internet of Things devices like smart speakers, Alexa, or Google Home. But what about more industrial applications like smart streetlights or connected parking meters? Today on Dialogue, we'll take a look at industrial IoT devices and their integration into smart city technologies. Our guests include Jeff Branham, Knoxville's chief traffic engineer, Rich Karpinski, research director at 451 Research, and Heather Buckberry, senior technical project manager in the Whole Building and Community Integration Group at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. Well, good slightly afternoon to everyone. This is 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Victor Agreta, and today on Dialogue, we're talking about technology, specifically the Internet of Things, industrial uses for IoT devices, and smart cities, which combine data and industrial IoT for a variety of purposes on a citywide scale. My guests today are Jeff Branham, Knoxville's chief traffic engineer, Rich Karpinski, a technology analyst at 451 Research, and Heather Buckberry, a senior technical project manager in the Whole Building and Community Integration Group at Oak Ridge National Lab. Good afternoon, everybody.
Yeah, good afternoon to you.
And I believe we've got Rich on the line.
Yeah, hi, Victor.
Hi, Rich. I want to start with you, actually, and first of all, let's cover what is the Internet of Things?
Sure. I mean, it's an interesting question because we see it in our consumer lives, but as you teed up this topic, it's a much bigger and even somewhat different thing in the enterprise or in industrial areas. So we define IoT as a project that gathers data from embedded sensors and circuitry. Now, that could be in the industrial area, something like a factory machinery, a camera, field equipment, or an end-user device. So we all carry smartphones, tablets, wearables. Again, in industrial, you've got things like heads-up displays, little goggle-type devices that are used in factories. And, you know, an IoT initiative then takes that data, collects it, and uses it to deliver really a wide array of use cases. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the kinds of things IoT data can do. And it uses that to deliver some sort of value or business outcome, you know, optimize workflow or business operation, improve customer targeting, enable new product, the delivery and design of new products or services, a wide array of things. So you start with an endpoint. It's got data associated with it, a particular use case that's defined, and it's delivering some sort of business outcome, right? That's how we define it.
Excellent. And Jeff, I want to talk to you for a minute about what sort of connected devices Knoxville is installing.
Well, as we move into the modernization process here in Knoxville, we're finding that more and more devices that we buy have the potential of being connected, and some of which we are currently connected with. Some of the ones we're currently connected with is the latest one that most folks will know about is our modernized parking meter system, which is a centrally controlled system. It takes credit card payments in particular. We feel like that's a convenient service that was not possible with the old technology, and then, of course, the new technology allows for that convenience and a more hassle-free experience, if you will, trying to find change and that sort of thing. Also, our school zone flashers are now connected and centrally controlled as well. That's about 70 of those out there in the system. We also have traffic controllers now that are about half of our system now have the capability of being connected, and about half of those, so a fourth of our system, are connected through a wireless, primarily a wireless system, but we do have some fiber optic systems out there. We also have AVLs on our fleet. So every vehicle in the city, a traffic system, has AVL system on it so that we can better dispatch our resources to requests for services and things that are out there. We also have a bike sharing system out there now that's very interesting and I believe it's going to be very popular, the Zagster Pace app. Really interesting deployment of connected vehicles, even though they're human-powered vehicles. And also we have our DSRC, which is a dedicated short-range communication. We have one of those, but it's very unique in that I think it's the only deployment of DSRC in the state. that is connected to our central traffic server. That's a very unique application, and the purpose of that is for data sharing our signal phase and timing information, and that is a critical element for connecting vehicles to infrastructure data. And of course, it is an ongoing innovation that we're currently working with partners on, but that's a very important thing. And of course, our latest and probably largest Internet of Thing deployment is our LED lighting system, which is 30,000 lights that have the potential of being connected.
Wow. And I just want to say, both Rich and Jeff, both of these things sound like future type stuff. It sounds like Star Trek type stuff. I mean, you're using acronyms that sound a little boring, but in the end, it really makes the city safer and better overall. So it's exciting stuff for nerds like me, for gadget nerds like me. Heather, I want to turn to you real quick. A lot of people, of course, know in their homes maybe things like Alexa or Google Home. What other sorts of IoT devices might someone put in their homes today?
Well, we've seen a lot more of devices come to the marketplace since there's been integration offered through a product like an Alexa or a Google Home device. So that could, in the homeowner setting, that could end up being anything from a smart receptacle to a coffee maker, integrated blinds, roller shades that will go up and down at command. We see more now in suites of appliances that can be internet connected to a certain extent. The level of service varies amongst those appliances, but now you can get the refrigerator, clothes washing, clothes dryers, air conditioning systems, of course, have been integrated for quite some time. They were probably the first ones that came to the homeowner. But there's a new variety of products with a ever-decreasing price associated with that that makes it much more available to many more homeowners.
Okay, so we've got all of these things connected. Rich, talk a little bit more about some of the industrial applications of IoT devices. I mean, how does this affect people at home? Does it save them money? Does it make things get to their door faster through Amazon? What are some of the things that people might look around and be able to see in their day-to-day life?
Sure. I mean, I think Jeff had a great rundown of applications, right? And it was tied to devices that are both, long-standing and a lot of them were brand new. When you talk about industrial applications, it's kind of that mix, right? So how it impacts the end user in terms of an industrial application, some of it's unseen. So, it might be a manufacturer who can produce more cheaply, more efficiently, that can monitor its production line and predict when a machine's going to break versus have to deal with it afterwards, and just becomes that much more efficient, and then that feeds through to the consumer via better products, cheaper products, et cetera, right? With all of Jeff's smart city applications, some of the value to citizens and consumers is clear, right? You can take out your credit card and use it. It's a much more convenient path. School zone info is delivered more timely. All bike sharing is obvious, right? And then there are those things that happen behind the scenes where the folks in Knoxville that are working in emergency care or emergency services can just be dispatched more efficiently. It can be optimized and routed on a more timely basis, and then that's life saving, right? So all of this data analytics and data awareness, it has just untold uses and benefits. Some are obvious, some are not so obvious. But I think Jeff's lineup there is a good description of the kinds of things that can be leveraged, whether it's a city or a company or a factory, an enterprise. Lots of potential benefits.
And it occurs to me, too, that we've been talking about smart cities. But, Rich, what would you say is the sort of definition? You had a great definition for Internet of Things. So what's a definition of smart cities? It's, connected devices, but what else?
Sure. I mean, this stuff can be a little vague and hard to grasp. I think, again, look at Jeff's breakdown of things, right? So the kinds of projects he's working on, you're going to get, you're going to have improved public transportation. You're going to have city roads and traffic that is much more efficient and controlled in a much more automated way. You have the ability to sensor the environment all around the city. So if a fire or an earthquake or an air quality issue comes up, you're going to know about it right away. And then you get into these kinds of things that maybe no one's ever thought about, smart lighting, right? So the ability to really manage that system, reduce carbon output and reduce costs. And we even talk to, vendors in cities that are doing things like intelligent waste bins. So, you don't have to go out with that truck so often. You know, you have a sense of when, how waste is piling up and how you can manage it. So all of these sort of smart, I think a smart city more than anything is just taking all of that data, analyzing it, being able to run analytics against it, really understanding what's happening around a city, doing quick turn stuff like, paying for parking or controlling a traffic light, and then also analyzing all that for the long term just to make that city more efficient.
I remember reading a story about creating Epcot and Walt Disney, and he had this vision of connected trash cans so that sure. You wouldn't see a trash can overfilled. You would know when it was getting close to being full, and a crew would come over and very quietly get rid of the trash, so you never had that problem. So that, this is stuff that's been thought of for quite a long time. Jeff, what is the city's process for evaluating and implementing this type of technology into our infrastructure?
Well, I guess our in traffic engineering, when we have a device that we need to purchase, there's usually a problem we're trying to solve. So the first thing we do is we analyze what is the problem, and then we do a little of our own research to figure out what might be out there that could serve that problem or service that problem, and then we create specifications. So once we have a specification that we feel like would address our issues from an outcome standpoint, then we advertise or announce this desire to have proposals, and then we basically have vendors come out and propose different solutions that they have, and a lot of times they're systematic solutions. We have a selection committee that looks at those deployments or those examples. They usually come and demonstrate their solution to us. We evaluate it on a performance matrix. We usually evaluate numerically so that we have a ranking system. And then we usually either negotiate a price or we have a price already in the proposal that's part of that evaluation process. And then we go from there.
Well, it's a lot of moving parts, obviously. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the individual technologies. We're going to look at, we're going to kind of drill down into some more specifics about this. We're going to talk about microgrids and a lot of really exciting stuff out there. We're going to be back in just a minute to take your questions at either 974-5050 or via Twitter at WUOTFM or on our Facebook page. You're listening to 91.9 FM WUOT. And this is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. Today we are diving into the deep end of technology, talking about the Internet of Things, industrial applications for connected devices, and how all of this relates to what are called smart cities. My guests are Jeff Branham, Knoxville Chief Traffic Engineer, Rich Karpinski, Technology Analyst with 451 Research, and Heather Buckberry, a Senior Technical Project Manager at ORNL. We encourage you to call in. The number is 974-5050. You can also post a question on our Facebook page or use Twitter or just tweet at WUOTFM. So let's get back to a couple of these things here. Rich, smart cities involve a lot of moving parts. So how vital is it to choose a platform when you're choosing vendors? How do all these things talk to each other?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a tremendous number of moving parts. And if you can, I think everybody's familiar these days with cloud services. And then that's at the one end, out in the cloud, Microsoft, the Googles, the Amazons, and then all the enterprise HPs and IBMs. And then that's the one end of the potential infrastructure. Then the other end is that little sensor that's sitting in some sort of location or device, right? And so the integration and the data flows have to go all the way from that little device, often all the way through some centralized location, then all the way out to the cloud and back again. And at each step, there's some storage required. There's some some compute required and some analytics, and then there's the bandwidth to move it back and forth. So these are very, very complex systems. And I think, as Jeff said, you know, as they spec out their projects, a lot of the work is driven by, you know, every technology vendor you can think of has an IoT platform that handles a lot of those capabilities. And then there's, you know, system integrators and local folks who in the past have put together, you know, the client server systems and the web systems in your businesses that have real specialties in a lot of these particular types of applications. So it's a very challenging environment for the types of people, like Jeff's team, that have to put this together. And there are a tremendous number of moving parts, but luckily, you know, there's a lot of help in the way of vendors who can put together some systems to enable these kinds of things.
Excellent. I believe we've got a call real quick. We're going to take this, and this is Michael in Lenoir City. He's got a question about hacking and how to address that. Hi, Michael.
Hello there. Okay, after the news with Atlanta being subjected to hackers demanding ransom for the system in Atlanta, what are smart cities going to do about that situation?
That's a great question, and I guess so. I was going to ask this a little bit later, but you know, security is obviously a huge problem. Jeff, you know, how do you guys handle that? How do you look at that from the city when you're evaluating these things?
Well, you know, as traffic engineering and traffic managers, we realize our limitations with regards to, especially when you get into network protection and server protection. We have a very skilled, very aware IS department, or its information systems department. We collaborate with them on every single purchase. So we look at it. There's four main levels of security that we look at as the deployment of the traffic system, and that is the physical security of the device itself on the street. There is the security of the the network itself, and how is it secured from a data standpoint, and data packets going back and forth, and validation of data as well. There's spoofing and things of that nature that go on out there. We also have the security of the server itself. So you have firewalls, physical firewalls, such as hardware. You also have protection baked into some of the hardware, like the switches and things of that nature, down in the servers, plus the physical server itself is secured in the city. So there's those three levels. And then we also are having to look at the security of our data and data sharing arrangements, and how those datas or the data itself is protected, and what is the use of the data, and securing legal agreements that secure that for our citizens and users.
So for those of you who are thinking you're going to cool hand Luke the parking meters, think again. We've probably got you outsmarted. We've got another call from Stephen in Knoxville. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, good morning. So two points, one of which is, I guess, you know, people looking to deploy these, or cities looking to deploy these, really need to consider the issue of the accuracy and the longevity of the sensors involved. I work in air quality, and there's an awful lot of hype about these mesh air quality sensors. Their accuracy is, in some cases, pretty terrible, and in the other case, that they're basically only work for about a year, and then components have to be replaced. And I'd rather not the city be making decisions based on bad sensor data. It'd be better to have no sensors than bad data. The second issue is that in working with one of the small cities, I was a little disturbed in asking about their kind of strategies for this whole thing. And literally what they had said is, you know, we're just going to collect all this data and kind of throw it at the wall and see what sticks. And my preference, you know, if we're going to spend, you know, city money or even federal money for these types of systems, I like the idea of project-specific things like the smart traffic lights, or, you know, if we're going to do a trash bin type of thing, let's define the system of how this thing's going to work rather than just kind of throw out all these sensors and try to start accumulating this data and then trying to figure out what to do with it 10 years from now. It just doesn't seem like...
We lost him there. But yeah, those are actually really good points. And I actually want to throw to Rich really quick. And Rich, tell me a little bit about, you know, what are you seeing in terms of longevity for these devices? Because obviously, we talked about this before the show a little bit, saying, you know, it's kind of like your Wi-Fi router, how you have to reboot it every now and again to get it to work. I mean, how big of a deal is that for vendors?
Yeah, these are challenging environments. I mean, you're out in the open. You think of a parking meter or some sensor on a light pole, right? So those are that's not a clean data room where you've got control of the environment. So those ongoing operational costs, definitely have to be considered. The other question there about, I think it boils down to is, do we trust our governments, or are governments smart enough to spend this money appropriately? That's an age old question. We're all citizens here, and we want our tax dollars and our whether they're state or coming in from the feds, to be used properly. All you can sort of hope for is again, I've been pointing to Jeff here a lot, a team that's really doing a nice job of vetting what are the right applications, what's the value delivered to the citizen. There's a lot of money out there. Probably Jeff doesn't feel like there's enough, but there's money floating around that you can get in terms of grants and support for these kinds of applications. So, work within those city teams, work with the vendors, really get a sense of what's working, have a return on investment for a government project, the same way it would be for a commercial project, right? Really put some business thinking behind it. And see if you can deliver that value. And some of these will deliver hard values, cost savings, and some of them will be quality of life and safety and other things that will need to be measured in other ways. I think that was a couple of great points about these systems are complex, and the value that you get out of them is not always easy to measure. So a lot of thinking and work needs to go into that to make especially a smart city project pay off.
And Jeff, any follow-up to that in terms of, what's Knoxville looking at? I mean, we talked about this, like you said before, parking meter, for one thing. The old mechanical ones probably lasted 20 years or something like that. The new ones, how much?
Yeah, and that's one of the things the caller made several great points about sensor degradation, and also the equipment maybe not being able to last as long, primarily because either the communication standards change over time to where it sort of becomes antiquated because it's not updatable. And so that's something you can spec into some of this, is where you have updatable devices and that sort of thing. But again, it starts with what is the problem to be solved. And a lot of our case, the truth is, the problem is the system needs to be improved. And so it's, how do you improve moving forward? And so it's the simple fact is we want the best solution for the problem that's in front of us to be solved. And in a lot of our cases, it's the simple fact that the system as it is today needs improvement, and it's not optional to not do it. It's something that our citizens and our economy here locally demands a well-working traffic management system. And, some of the things that Rich mentioned, which is very important, is the sensoring allows us to differentiate different types of traffic, and that allows us to prioritize certain types of traffic, like emergency medical services and fire, and it allows them to get to the hospital quicker, which is definitely a life-saving feature. But also the safety of the traffic flow as that vehicle travels through our system, it's much safer for them because it's no longer going through red lights and folks just having to hear a siren. The signal system is prepared for that to come long before he gets there. It's preparing traffic for that emergency medical service to get to the hospital. So we know the route to the hospital. We prepare a path to the hospital.
Wow. Okay, you are listening to Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. We're talking about Internet of Things. We're talking about smart cities. My guests are Jeff Branham with the Knoxville. He's the chief traffic engineer. Rich Karpinski, who's a technology analyst with 451 Research. And Heather Buckberry, senior technical project manager at ORNL. And Heather, I want to talk to you for a minute. We're talking about reliability. We're talking about return on investment. Tell me a little bit about microgrids, because I find this kind of an interesting technology.
Sure. So we have a project in the group that I work in at the laboratory where we're doing a demonstration of smart neighborhood homes in conjunction with a community neighborhood. And in this case, for our microgrid, we happen to have community solar. So every microgrid will have a generation capability. In this case, we have community solar. We also happen to have a natural gas generator. The microgrid will have a distribution system. So for us, that's an underground distribution system from the community microgrid a little bit down the street to our neighborhood. And then we have the points of service. In this case, it would be each of the individual homes in the neighborhood. As an added service in this particular microgrid demonstration that we're doing, we also have community-level battery storage. So we have the ability to capture that solar power during the day and have that stored in the battery system for use at night or at times when we need a little extra power for this community. So basically, we're looking at microgrid in terms of generation, some distribution, and multiple points of use.
And is this able to make neighborhoods more energy efficient or even independent?
It can make them more independent. It won't by itself make the neighborhood more efficient. You still need homes that are operating in an efficient manner. They need to be designed and constructed to be efficient. It's the presence of a microgrid is not going to have magical properties over subpar homes.
If you've got your window open and your heat blasting, it's not going to help that.
Right. If you are, even if you have a very efficient home, but you have a homeowner that is not concerned, you can operate it inefficiently. But together, the efficient homes with this grid connectivity, the grid interactive efficient homes, that's what we like to talk about at the laboratory, together with the microgrid, they can optimize use of resources so that you're generating power locally. You don't have as much distribution losses getting from that generation point to the point of use in the home. And so maybe you can optimize the use of the raw resources that are used in power generation so that your local microgrid is performing more efficiently at a certain point of time as to, opposed to maybe whatever resources available out beyond that from the transmission system, a remote generation unit that maybe is not as efficient or needs to be taken offline, that kind of thing for service. It provides flexibility and efficiency.
Okay. And you know, we were talking before the show, I have a Nest thermostat and it's connected. It does a great job overall. It does that data analytics and it says, hey, here are your patterns. You know, here's maybe a way to save a little bit. It even sends you feedback saying, I get an email every month saying, you know, here's how many leaps I earned by being more efficient, this kind of thing. The problem is when things don't work right. And it used to detect when I left home, and it would put it into a more economical mode. And, Rich, I wanted to ask you about this, actually. Reliability, you know, obviously when we're talking about city infrastructure, that's a big deal. So is there a baseline for reliability? Some of these things, while they're not maybe bleeding edge, it's you know, it's new technology. So what is there out there? What kind of awareness for bugs? You know, and bugs obviously could be a big problem when you're talking about this kind of stuff. Uh-oh. Is Rich still there?
Oop, sorry, had you on mute. Sorry about that. We already talked about a couple potential challenges in this area, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the caller was talking about we were talking about security, right? And so the potential for attack at various endpoints, which obviously would make things unreliable or knock them off as we all become more connected. We rely on these technologies more and more. So we all know how it feels when we lose our Wi-Fi or our cable modem. We're suddenly lost. You know, if we lose the power grid due to sort of over instrumentation and it goes out for a little bit. We're equally challenged. You know, the reliability of sensors, short and long term, we talked about. So, I mean, this needs to be built in from the ground up, and any system that's more connected becomes more valuable, but it also has more potential places where something could go wrong, right? So it gives a tremendous challenge to the people who are running these systems, the operations people who are running these systems. The counterpoint is all of this data is flowing in, so you've got the ability in real time to monitor these endpoints, these systems, more than ever before, and you've got the ability to leverage things like artificial intelligence and machine learning so that you don't need a crew of people necessarily to track all of this and do the analysis. You know, you can set up the algorithms and you can anticipate when things start to go wrong. So the technology angle is a give and take, right? It gives and it takes away. So, it's the problem and it's also the solution to some extent.
And Jeff, speaking of problems and solutions, I know that we talked in our previous interview about grid smart technology. Remind our audience what that is and how you're working with that and so far as traffic.
Okay, that's a great question. Of course, GridSmart, we're deploying a couple of applications. The first one is more of an improvement of an existing system where traditionally we have large metal detectors in the pavement. They're called they use inductive properties of the metal to determine whether there's something there. So it's literally an on-off switch. If something's there, it's on, knows that eventually it has to serve that particular phase. The GridSmart system allows us to do a much better job of recognizing whether there's one or two or three cars there and how long they've been there. It also allows us to virtualize the detection zone so that we can actually detect upstream of a particular phase, and that allows us to do several things with our controllers that we can't do with the traditional loop system. So we have, I think, 8 locations where we're experimenting and using that particular technology. One of their other systems that we also are using is their smart grid system, which allows us to determine actual trip times and delay of a particular route. And in traditionally, we would literally get in a car and we have clipboards and timers and we have to calculate how long it takes to go through the system and how long we stop and how long we have dilemma zones and all kinds of things. It's very complicated and there's a lot of potential error in those reports. And of course, the writing of the report itself takes a lot of time. The GridSmart system in real time allows us to create analytics and performance information that lets us fine-tune the traffic system programming so that we can look at past performance and predict future programming based on past traffic patterns. And we found that technology to be incredibly powerful. So that's kind of how we're utilizing that information right now, technology.
Like we said, hardware and data working together. We're going to be back in just a minute to take more of your questions at either 974-5050 or via Twitter at WUOT-FM or on our Facebook page. You're listening to 91.9 FM WUOT. This is Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT. We are diving into the deep end of technology and how it relates to smart cities. These are industrial applications of Internet of Things devices that uses big data. My guests are Jeff Branham with Knoxville's Chief Traffic Engineer, Rich Karpinski, Technology Analyst with 451 Research, and Heather Buckberry, a Senior Technical Project Manager at ORNL. And we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 974-5050. You can post a question on our Facebook page, or you can use Twitter to tweet at WUOT.FM, or WUOTFM is our Twitter handle, since there's no periods, there's no dots in any of that. Rich, I want to talk to you for just a minute. We've actually talked a little bit about, we've used this term again, really without necessarily explaining it. What is big data?
Sure. In these systems, one of the things I think about is this idea of fast data, right? So in a lot of these systems, applications we talked about, that street light, right, or a factory floor, there's going to be a little bit of data generated out of a computer or a system, and it's going to feed back directly, right? It's going to change that traffic light, or it's going to trigger emergency response, or it's going to do something on a factory floor. Yet all the idea of big data is collecting all of that small, quick, fast data, right, and storing it over time, and hence over time it becomes big, right? It becomes big storage facility to keep it all, and you start collecting it over time, and then you can analyze it, right? So you can look at patterns that evolve not just in that second or that small little turn of time, but over time. So Jeff's GridSmart can not only do some real-time traffic reallocation, but it can get that system can get a sense of what's happening over time. It can impact how roads are built, how the traffic lights and even how where buildings go up and where stores go up and all of that, right? And so the ability to take large amounts of data that's collected second by second and do that kind of AI or artificial, really smart new style of analytics against it, that's what we're talking about with big data. And the goal is to get new insights that were really not possible before.
And Jeff, tell us a little bit about Knoxville's Open Data Initiative.
Okay, yeah. Last year, our mayor authorized what we're calling an open data policy. And critical to that is the Open Data Governance Committee, which is composed of several key members of the administration, but also key members of our information systems group as well, and our legal team. And the purpose of this is to leverage information that our system generates. We're investing in this in a lot of these devices that do collect information, but we want to be smart about how we manage the information, how we store it and protect it, and also distribute it, and distribute it, and possibly even how we analyze and report the information so that the citizens glean a benefit from it. So that open data policy includes the conscious effort to figure out the best way to serve the public with the data we currently are generating.
Heather, let's project forward a little bit. What does the next 5 years look like for homeowners looking to make their homes smarter and safer?
I think in the near term, you're going to see more people tempted to go ahead and test out adding a few more interconnected features into their homes. Surprisingly enough, a lot of people still aren't using programmable thermostats, whether they're internet connected or not. They're not using them. So there's still a huge opportunity to upgrade thermostats in people's homes to be programmable and interconnected, just to make them easier to use. The interconnected is a better way, actually. You'll see more people, I think, moving into using simple devices for convenience around the home, like the receptacles that can be used to turn on and off lights or small appliances around the home. I think there'll be a longer period for the uptake of durable goods that are interconnected. Appliances like dishwashers, clothes washers, and clothes dryers, they are on the marketplace now, but those are big purchases for most people. That's not a spur-of-the-moment impulse thing to go to the store and just decide, oh, I'd like that interconnected clothes dryer.
Well, I don't want to have to buy a new refrigerator every year, you know, the new S9 or the S10 or whatever, right?
Right. I'm totally there with you on that. So I think that'll be a longer-term thing. And a lot of that is that it's on the manufacturers to demonstrate what is the value proposition to the homeowner. It's nice to have the shiny new thing, but there's a limit to what kind of mileage you get out of that from posting it on social media that, hey, look what I got in the laundry room. So there has to be a serious statement of value to the homeowner of this is what you're getting. Of course, you're giving up your money in exchange for what added benefit. And that may be convenience. It may be energy savings. It's what we're interested in at the laboratory. But I think those larger dollar items, that's going to be a much slower process. The thermostat and small appliances, that's much easier, and that's going to go faster because the price point is so much lower.
That makes sense. We've got another call from Greg in Knox County. Hi, Greg.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Just a quick question on the traffic light cameras. Is there any way you could put for the yellow lights, like a countdown timer like you do for the crosswalks so we, know how much time we really have to get through? Anyway, I'll hang up and listen, see what you got to say.
All right, thanks.
Well, that's a great question. We do have that ability. However, a lot of our traffic control system, the way we communicate the traffic system status, especially with regards to traffic signals, is highly regulated. We have to conform to the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which is a Federal Highway Administration guideline. It's actually on the internet. You can check it out. We have to follow all those procedures with regards to yellow timing, especially we call those clearance intervals because they're safety intervals. So those intervals are tightly controlled. That being said, we are looking at communicating that sort of information to users through dedicated short-range communications. We actually have that capability and have done so here in Knoxville with the UT Transportation Engineering Department. They wrote Android apps that have communicated with our system. And one of the great things about it is it allows a user, it understands the heading or the approach of the particular user and communicates how much time is left and how much time you have on red before it goes green. It also has the capability for future applications for, say, a disabled person or someone who has a sight can't see properly, the ability to preempt the signal or push, if you will, the button for the pedestrian phase virtually through an app. Those are the kind of things we're looking at deploying here in the near future.
That's pretty cool. And that ties into really my next question, which is, what about the city in terms of 5 more years, you know, or maybe even 10 more years? I mean, what's the future hold? We joke about flying cars. That's not going to happen. But what is realistically, what could we do in the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, I think it's safe to say that they're not going to be anything like the past 5 years. I think you're going to see a lot of change, a lot of innovation, both on the vehicles themselves, but also in our system and the best practices we use to manage our system. I think that's changing. You spoke a little bit about security. I think that's going to change a lot. And I think another big one is maintenance. I think maintenance of the system is going to be critical moving forward, and sensor diagnostics and also user validation could become something like if we did deploy a preemption system for disabled users. I think that validation is going to be important to make sure that they are indeed registered with our system so that it's not spoofed or misused in some way. But I think moving forward, I think the caller, Rich, mentioned about big data. And I think one of the things that's very important is the usefulness of big data and the prediction. Predictive modeling is in its infancy with regards to traffic modeling. And I think adaptive traffic management will become something you'll see in the next 5 years. So I think those are the two big things that I see coming forward is how we manage the system. I think that's changing. The modeling process will change and the way we detect and categorize traffic. And that'll make us better planners so that we allocate our maintenance resources better. We provide better connectivity for our citizens so that pedestrians that get off of a bus have proper, safe connectivity to their destinations. And so we can prioritize those investments and justify them as well. And I also think moving forward, the analytics and reporting will be a lot better so that folks can see how the system in the traffic system in Knoxville is performing. They can actually look at the improvements over time, see how well that traffic is moving with that particular investment. And then moving forward, we can say, do we want to continue to invest in this particular technology? We can see the performance and the outcomes. So we'll become a lot more outcome-driven. Whether it's parking systems or traffic management or the LED lighting, we'll be able to monitor the energy use and maybe dim some lights that maybe don't have anybody around them. You know, why keep them on? So I think those are some of the things we'll see moving forward into the future.
You know, you mentioned spoofing, and I'll never forget, I was in Austin one time, and there were a number of groups that were showing all kinds of different technology around smart city tech. And I believe it was on a little car that was being driven, and there was a guy from Siemens, I believe. We were driving, and he was demonstrating this thing, how they could tell what the traffic lights were doing a couple of stops ahead. And you were talking about, you know, prioritizing and preparing, say it's an emergency vehicle. And while we were there, he discovered that someone was spoofing that as they were pretending to be an emergency vehicle. And it wasn't him, but it was somebody else that was doing that. So that's obviously a concern, is the security and reliability. And again, this was a couple of years ago. I'm sure they've got those bugs figured out by now. But Rich, I want to ask you real quick, how far away are we from this multimodal transport in cities, like autonomous vehicles with more bikes, with more short-term and, you know, parking away from the city center, those sorts of things? How far away are we from that, and what kind of tech needs to be implemented to do that?
Sure. Well, I think we're there today from a technology point of view. There are cars on the road in certain cities, certainly out in Silicon Valley, that are either via trial or moving into deployment that are autonomous, right? We hear about the crashes, but, you know, if there's one crash, that meant there's a lot of miles being covered without incident, right? So we're here today. You know, with all of these with all of these advancements, I think we, you know, an NPR audience and your audience needs to think about is it what we want, right? Do we want these things? You know, I think it's almost as much a social decision for the citizenry as it is, you know, just pure technology driving it. We're sitting here this week and Mark Zuckerberg's in front of Congress talking about how his system that collected an incredible amount of data that, you know, had a lot of unintended consequences that his company didn't realize and we as customers weren't aware of, right? And so the same sort of thing needs to happen with all of this smart city technology. All of the applications we talked about are fantastic and improve efficiency and safety and other things, but, you know, there's a tremendous amount of data being collected, and it's being used in ways that are new. I think, you know, we as citizens and customers and consumers need to understand all of this and have a big say. It's not runaway technology. It's a technology at the service of all of us. So when it comes to something like autonomous or semi-autonomous driving, autonomous might be a little strange, but semi-autonomous where you're automatically that car that's coming closer to you, you know about it, you know, in ways that you didn't before, there's tremendous value in that, right, and tremendous comfort. A completely autonomous driving environment, maybe that's less comfortable. So I think we all need to think about how comfortable we are and what directions we want to see and have some inputs into where all of this is going.
And, Jeff, just a couple of days ago, I was reading that Atlanta was chosen as one of 22 communities to participate in the second cohort of the Transportation for America Smart Cities Collaborative Program. Obviously, Atlanta has a lot more transportation issues than Knoxville. Anybody who's driven through Atlanta or in Atlanta can attest to that. But it's concerns about right-of-way and curb space that are starting to pick up some steam here as well. So what does the city want to do to address those issues? And that includes mixed transport.
Okay, well, you know, management of curb space is a huge deal. It's very important to our property owners downtown, our stakeholders, and it depends on that for their viability of their businesses. But also we have people that live downtown, so, you know, their livelihoods are affected by how we manage our curb space. It's a really big deal. In order to manage that properly, you have to have great connections to the community. You have to have advocates for the community. And in order to do that, you have to regularly meet with them. You have to know how they feel about certain things and be willing to be flexible and adjust as needs adjust. And so that's kind of where we're at. We have a lot of growth going on in our Fort Sanders area and around the UT campus. These are all good things unless you're living it, unless you're down there dealing with it. And then it's not doesn't feel so good. It's painful. Even though it's growth, it's pain. So we've found ourselves adjusting a lot to accommodate those needs, especially in our downtown areas. We went through the KUB upgrades, and now we're moving into the UT expansion or improvements, and it's created you know a lot of management issues. But to be more direct to your question, I think we have, you know, you have the commercial loading areas that need to be available during certain times of day so that the businesses and also the institutional need, you know, the hospitals, the elementary school out in that area, they need to serve their cafeterias. They have a lot of, you know, supplies and materials that come in. So we, you know, we're constantly looking at that situation, that scenario as certain roads close because we're having, you know, major investments in those right-of-ways, we had to close the street sometimes or close a lane or remove parking. Well, that affects the other users. So I guess having that connectivity to the community is very important. And actually, if where possible, warning them that this is a situation, how do you feel about it, maybe showing them our proposed solution so that they can respond to it. Maybe we can make an adjustment before we actually deploy a particular you know, parking arrangement or time frames for loading. And so far that's worked really well.
Well, this is all really, really cool technology stuff. Rich, I've got about 20 seconds or so left. What's the smartest city in the world right now?
Huh. I would say that the smartest country, the most aggressive is India, which is trying to roll out 100 smart cities by 2022. So, you know, that kind of, you know, countrywide effort. We see that all over. There's a lot of funding here in the U.S. and elsewhere. So, you know, it's not one. It's really broad, and you look at a city like Knoxville, a mid-sized city, look how aggressive and futuristic all of this is. It's really impressive.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for joining us. Our producer is Greg Hill. My guests today were Jeff Branham with the City of Knoxville, Rich Karpinski of 451 Research, Heather Buckberry from Oak Ridge National Laboratory. I want to thank you all. Thank you all for listening as well. I'm Victor Agreta. This is your public radio station, 91.9 FM WUOT and HD1 Knoxville. We are listener-supported public radio broadcasting from the campus of the University of Tennessee. This is Dialogue.